What's up, everyone, and welcome to the most positive pop culture podcast in the multiverse of Metalcore Nerds, where each week I have a guest from the podcasting or music community. We talk about the latest and greatest entertainment. I'm your host, Sean Mott, and today the She-Hulk After Show is back. We're covering episodes 3 and 4, as well as talking about all the news that just dropped at D23, but I can't do it alone. Joining me, I have Bobby Crow from Signs of the Swarm. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, Sean?
Good, man. How about you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for taking time on your day off from tour to talk some nerd stuff with me.
Of course. I love nerd stuff. It's my favorite.
Hell yeah. I love to hear it. So if you are returning to Metalcore Nerds, thank you so much for coming back. You guys are the reason the show keeps happening and keeps doing the things it's doing. If you are new to Metalcore Nerds, please stop what you're doing right now. Go to your favorite podcasting platform, search Metalcore Nerds, and hit that subscribe button. And if you like what you're hearing, give us a review. It helps the show continue to grow. And of course, you can follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at Metalcore Nerds. Follow us there to get all the updates. This is how Metalcore Nerds breaks down. Each week, we talk about the latest nerd news. Then we go into our now watching section, highlighting what we've been watching in theaters and or streaming. And then we get into our main topic, which again is She-Hulk. But first things first, we have the Metalcore Nerds Song of the Week. And the Song of the Week this week is from our guest. This is Signs of the Swarm with their latest single, Unbridled. We'll be right back. Again, that was Signs of the Storm with Unbridled. The first single was Century Media Records. Now, Bobby, tell us a little bit more about the single.
Oh, this is Unbridled. We just dropped it a few days ago. We've been working on this deal with Century for a little while. Super excited. We started working on this song earlier this year, and we kind of like didn't know what we were going to do as far as the label goes. We were just coming off of our deal with Unique Leader Records, and we were debating on re-signing, shopping, going independent. Our band changes sound constantly. Like, we're not the type of band, like, especially in a deathcore world, that just wants to keep making like the same album, the same songs over and over again. To some people, they love that. Some people, not so much, but we love it. So, you know, that's what matters. But yeah, it's a bit of a change. It's a little more, I guess, fast and groovy, aggressive. Yeah, we just put a music video out for it. It's out now. If you want to check it out, please do. Let us know if you like it.
Yes, definitely check out the new single and be on the lookout for Signs of Swarm. This band has been touring nonstop all year this year, and I can only imagine it's not going to stop anytime soon. So definitely check out that band. Speaking of new music, I got to hear the new Devil Wears Prada album early. It's called Color Decay.
Word.
It's a little unexpected, I think.
Really? Because
you think of Devil Wears Prada, you think it's going to be super heavy, right? It's not that heavy. It's kind of softer. There's still heavy parts. It still feels like Devil Wears Prada. But if you're expecting like the Zombie EP or With Roots Above, this probably is not the album for you. It's kind of more like, if you compared it to when Bring Me the Horizon did That's the Spirit, that's what this album feels like.
Oh, really?
To me, that's a pretty cool twist. It's kind of like what you're saying. They're kind of like evolving as a band. And for me, personally, I haven't liked a Devil Wears Prada album, like a full album, since 818, which came out almost 10 years ago. So
honestly, I have not, like, I love that band. Like, they're definitely like a, like, they have my heart, you know, like their legacy band. But since Zombie, since I was in high school, I haven't really cared to sit and just like, if I listen to them now, unless it's just a single, I usually just put on With Roots Above or Plagues, pretty much. You know what I mean? So I feel that. But honestly, I really liked That's the Spirit. I mean, like, first, I remember, like, the first song was cool. Like, everyone, I'm just like, oh, what the fuck? And then I actually listened to it, and I listened to it a lot. And it was one of those things that just, like, ended up on my phone when I was going to college. So I heard it all the time. You know, I'd get in my car, and it would just start playing. And I'm like, this is actually really sick. It's probably something that will grow on me.
Yeah, that's kind of the exact interaction I had with this album, because the first time I listened to it, I was like, huh, not what I was expecting, kind of threw me off. But then I went to go listen to it again to like properly review it for the podcast. And I was like, man, this is actually really good. I was like, damn, like, it's definitely one of those albums, like, the more you play it, the kind of better it gets. Like, it flows really well as a record, which I think is a big problem in music today, is that people don't write records. They write just songs and throw them together.
Yeah.
And this definitely feels like a record. My favorite songs off it, Salt, Sacrifice, and 25. 25 is like a really slow song. So just a forewarning for that. But the record drops on September 16th on Solid State Records. Again, that's Devil Wears Prada with Color Decay. So check that out. And if you liked the new Signs of Storm song that I played earlier, or any of the other stuff I've been talking about lately on the podcast, make sure you check out the Metalcore Nerds Pull List Spotify playlist, where I put all my favorite recent songs. Now, on to the nerd news. You ready to talk some nerd news?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go.
Okay, D23 just happened. We're recording this on the day of D23, a little behind the curtain. Yeah, a little hours after me sitting on my laptop, live tweeting and posting about D23 news, pretty much. But it left us with a lot of news. Some people have found it a little underwhelming. Especially coming off San Diego Comic-Con, where they just announced a million things. They didn't really announce anything new. They announced one new thing on the Marvel side, really, but then just gave us more updates on everything, which is fine. We didn't get Fantastic Four news, so I'll just say that up front. All we got is the confirmation that Matt Shakman from WandaVision is confirmed to be directing the Fantastic Four, and I know a lot of people were disappointed by that, but this is the problem with media today, is that we put too much like faith in the media, or what gets posted in the media, I think. And that makes our expectations much higher than they probably should be. It doesn't mean you don't have to be underwhelmed by what you got. That's totally fine. It's just, we got to really temper our expectations based on what news outlets are posting, because they're not Marvel. They're not the ones doing these presentations. You know, they only hear these things from our sources, and then they're doing their job as reporting it to, you know, get clicks and get attention to their websites and everything like that. So you have to really take that with a grain of salt until we see what's actually, because they're like, man, what the fuck? No Fantastic Forecasting. I was like, when did they ever say they're announcing the Fantastic Forecast? So I was like, Marvel never did. Every news outlet under the sun did. Sure.
Yeah.
Like, Marvel, you know?
Yeah. It will definitely get your hopes up. And exactly. You have to take it with a grain of salt, just like everything. It's the same with music.
Yeah. Rumors are never good until they're legit. You know, rumors can ruin a lot of things. So, but it's the big Lucasfilm, Marvel, 20th Century Fox panel happened today. We got our first trailer at The Mandalorian Season 3. Now, I love The Mandalorian.
For me, honestly, like, I grew up through through the prequels, you know what I mean? Right. And then after that, I didn't really give a shit about 7, 8, 9, and until I saw The Mandalorian, and that actually made me care enough to go back and watch the whole new wave of Star Wars. And that was, like, a big refresher for me, like, coming back. It made me care about it again, because, like, growing up with it just felt like it kind of wasn't the same. And then, but after I saw that, it completely changed my mind. I was like, dude, this is what I've been waiting for. And then it made me want to go and just like relearn everything and like dive in again. You know what I mean? So I'm very excited for that. I'm excited for all the Star Wars content coming out right now. It's a very special time to be a Star Wars fan, especially with John and everything. Like, it's a very
John Favreau and Dave Filoni are the goats in my book, for sure. This Mandalorian trailer looks epic as hell. We're getting a lot more Mandalorian. We're getting the king himself, Babu Freak, is returning from like one of the best parts of The Rise of Skywalker, in my opinion. So he's going to be there, which is super interesting to see how he plays into all of this. And it looks like we might be getting like a Mandalorian type of war, possibly.
Yeah,
we'll see how it goes, but
I love that vibe. I feel like it's always like kind of like the natural arc of it seems like to go, like, obviously with Marvel, all these things, like, that seems like the natural arc that always happens, is always, like, the internal, like, so they ended on this really high note, you know, of season two, and then it's like,
yeah,
that's the logical step, you know, internal conflict.
Yeah, which is kind of full circles, because when we first meet Bo-Katan in Clone Wars, there's like a massive Mandalorian shift of factions and a war there too. And you kind of see it in Rebels too, with Sabine and Bo-Katan, because a lot of Mandalorian defect to the Empire in Rebels, which happens like right before A New Hope. It's like years after Clone Wars. This whole Mandalorian Civil War is like kind of like been an ongoing thing forever, but it's cool. We'll be able to see it in live action, because that's what we haven't seen. So yeah. I think it was after Mandalorian season one when Moff Gideon comes out with the Darksaber, and I didn't know what the Darksaber was at that point, because it's from Clone Wars, and that made me go watch the Clone Wars and watch Rebels.
So that's what happened to me too. So when I was a kid, I watched Clone Wars off and on, but like I never, and I mean, obviously, like, Disney Plus made it really accessible, but for that, like, you bought the DVDs or something, there was really, it was hard to just binge that series.
Yeah.
Actually, the dudes in my band, Jeff and Mike, like, really turned me, after season one of Mandalorian, they really turned me on to the Clone Wars. And luckily, Disney Plus has an Essential. So I still haven't seen all of it, but I watched most of the Essential series that they have, which is really cool that they did that. It's like 26 episodes or something. And so I learned a lot from that too, because I didn't realize how much I was missing. I didn't realize, like when growing up, I didn't realize that was such an essential, like, I just kind of assumed it was more childish, you know what I mean?
Right.
It was on like Cartoon Network or some shit, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, so going back and seeing it, I was like, I can't believe I missed out on that for so long.
I was probably the same way too. I was like, oh, it's an animated show, who cares? But then once I saw the Darksaber thing, I'm like, oh, it's from the Clone Wars. I was like, oh, maybe this stuff is important. And then you watch it and you learn all this Mandalorian lore and stuff, and you're like, wow, this is so fucking cool. And it adds so much more to the prequels and stuff like that too. The Essential list is probably fine, honestly, because there's a lot of filler. I watched almost every episode, and there's a lot of episodes that do not matter at all. What you watch is probably fine. It's probably totally fine.
I think someday I'll take time to watch it all. But
yeah,
I'm appreciative. They've done that for a lot of stuff. It makes it very easily digestible for people who want to learn, but, you know, unfortunately may have a busy life or whatever.
It's like, oh yeah, here's seven seasons of a show, and you're like, what?
Like, all the stuff that's coming out right now.
It's insane.
It's, yeah, if you t- to get caught up would take you years.
Literally, dude.
A year, you know, so.
100%. Other than that, really, there was like a Willow trailer that looked pretty cool. I never watched Willow as a kid, so I was like, this looks cool. It looks like a cool fantasy thing. And then they talked about Ahsoka, which Jon Favreau described as Dave Filoni's magnum opus, which I was already stoked for the series because it's basically a live action sequel to Rebels, which Rebels is like one of my favorite Star Wars things. Yeah. So I cannot wait to see this series. I feel like it's going to rip everyone's heart out. Like, people are not prepared for how emotional and how like heavy the show is going to be. Yeah. And I know they showed like a little teaser, I think, at Star Wars Celebration that hasn't been aired, but it was like a very short thing. So I don't even know when it's coming out. So I wasn't really expecting any footage or anything anyway. But yeah, it was cool to just hear them talk about how The Mandalorian was basically test to see how audiences would respond to like a live action project, like fueled by Dave Filoni's brain, and yeah, how it obviously paid off very well. And yeah, that led to him being able to do this Ahsoka series. And that's like my most anticipated Star Wars thing for sure. Like,
there's a lot of like depth there that I'm very interested in. So I feel like with The Mandalorian again, like the live action, it made me want to learn so much. Like, I used to like everything from the music to, and it's also really great that they have all this content for behind the scenes, like, and I mean, now too, going through with like the whole last phase of Marvel, there's so much behind the scenes that, like, in the, you know, older movies and TV shows, you just don't have that, you know?
Yeah.
So I love being able to sit and like learn about the music and learn about the sets and learn about the stuff. And before, it was just, you know, whatever you could find on YouTube or,
yeah,
you know, and now it's just there and it's in sequence and, It made me really want to learn a lot about more than just the show, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, more than the surface level of that.
The Marvel stuff, they do one for every project now. They do like a making of for every project, which is so wild. But it's so cool to see how they pull this stuff off. It gives me such like a bigger appreciation for it than I did before, because I feel like filmmaking is such like a mind-blowing thing to me of how it even exists and how it even happens. And you're just like, oh, that's how they did that. Whoa, that's
insane. I love the technology, especially now. Like, and that show, as I mean, from what I obviously I don't watch a ton about behind the scenes outside of like, you know, Disney and Marvel, and it's because it's accessible with them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they're very like they're pushing the boundaries of what technology can do on these shows. And that is like really inspiring to me. Even in music, it's really inspiring to me. I love seeing like how they create, I mean, it's especially for Star Wars, they create themes, you know what I mean, of for different characters, for this and that. And like, that's kind of always been a thing, but now to really like see how they break down the emotion and the like the vibe that they want to set and the instruments they use and this, that kind of shit, like, that's very special for me. I think that's really cool. That, and it's made me want to learn a lot about the show. It's just, it's super intrinsic. It makes you care about the show and the characters more than just like, oh, I'm watching the show every week. Yeah. Cause it's,
cool, you know. Yeah, exactly. Like scoring a show or a movie is so like nuts. Like, to even think about doing something like that, it's so crazy.
Yeah.
So cool.
I don't know if it really translates well, but that's something that like we have tried to do in like on the last album, the last two albums really, is just thinking about like the flow of, like you were talking about making a record, but between writing songs and making a record is that like the flow, the emotion that goes from song to song to song, and like creating a theme, even if it's just, you know, fucking distorted guitar versus this or that, like,
right.
I think that's something that makes you, it gives you that intrinsic feeling, like you want to come back to it. It gives you care. It makes you care about it more than just.
Yes. I mean, I always attribute music to pop culture as kind of similar outlets. I mean, that's literally why I made this podcast, was to bring them both together, you know. Onto the Marvel side of things, we got a Werewolf by Night trailer. It's coming out October 7th. In less than a month, it's coming out. And they waited this long. It's been rumored for a long time. It's directed by Michael Giacchino, which that dude does scores for like the biggest movies ever. Ton of the Marvel movies, a ton of the Pixar movies, things like that. And this looks like a straight up like Universal old school horror movie. It's all in black and white.
I was watching it with my fiance and we were like, this, like, we've actually been waiting for something like this for because we really enjoy horror movies. We enjoy old horror movies,
right? A lot.
And so to see a play on it, like, okay, so the thing with those old horror movies is now when you watch them, especially if you've seen them a lot, there's not really any like more excitement or fear there anymore. It's like a comfort show, you know what I mean? Or comfort movie. Whereas when we're watching, I'm like, this is actually really exciting and like creepy and
wow,
you know what I mean? And I haven't seen anything like that in ever, honestly. No. At least in my lifetime, anything that's that exciting, like in black and white.
Yeah. And I think it's really cool. It's like, I've been saying this for the past few months now, pretty much since Phase 4 started, is that Marvel's been taking some really big swings in different, going down different roads of genre and everything like that. Most things still have kind of like a Marvel flair to it, but like even with Multiverse of Madness, that was kind of a Sam Raimi horror movie. You know, it wasn't really like any other Marvel movie we've seen before. And even Taika Waititi was like a straight up rom-com comedy, you know, that's a Thor movie too. And WandaVision was like nothing we've ever seen before.
Yeah, that was a big throw for me, actually. It actually took me a little while to watch it because at first it was like, I just kind of didn't get it. And
yeah.
After seeing people talk about it, I was like, all right, I'm going to take the time to really pay attention to it. So yeah, that's really cool. I think this whole change is like, it's weird how it appeals to, it seems kind of far off, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Oh, like, that's a grad. But then when you, like, these people are so smart at like drawing you in and making you care about it in a way that you know, on surface level, you wouldn't think that it would be so.
Yeah, it's literally becoming like a comics universe in live action because even Marvel Comics have so many different feels and vibes and tones and everything like that. And they're really bringing that to live action. And they did that with the whole Infinity Saga. They built that trust and now they can take these big swings. And I love that they're taking them. They're not going to hit for everyone, especially kind of transcending these different genres. You're not going to appease everyone. It's impossible. There's no way you can, but they're widening their fan base by doing stuff like this, because even like something like Werewolf by Night is going to bring in people who probably never watched Marvel stuff before. They're like, oh, they're doing a black and white Universal horror homage. I'm going to check that out. I saw a mad love for that on my Twitter timeline, which was cool. Cause at first I was like, I wonder if people are going to think this is campy, too campy or too weird or whatever. But it's a lot of people that I follow are into horror too, so of course they're going to be into this. They're like, fuck yeah, this looks sick.
There's a fine line of like what seems cheesy or what seems like just like a grab, you know what I mean? But that's one thing is when I was watching it, I kept expecting it like to be like that, and it never, like, it didn't feel like that, and I was like, oh, this is actually really sick.
Yeah, like you see someone's arm get cut off in it, which is, yeah, no, there's some blood in it. Yeah, there's some like legit blood.
And what's cool about, oh man, I love black and white because the way that you have to play, I mean, I'm not like a filmographer, but just like the way you play with shadows, I mean, that's pretty much everything is just gradient. So it's the way you play with shadows, right? And like that was very exciting for me seeing that.
Yeah.
The shot that's like closing in on her and you see the werewolf in the back. Wolf
come up.
Yeah,
like, dude, that so was sick.
Hard.
Yeah, it was
music so video shit. You know what I mean? It really is seeing a metal music video.
Yeah, so I'm stoked to see that. You don't have to wait very long for it. It comes out in a month. October 7th on Disney Plus, Werewolf by Night. The next trailer, which they put out, they almost came like directly after each other on Twitter, it seemed. We got this first trailer for Secret Invasion. The Nick Fury starring, this looks like straight up paranoid espionage thriller.
Yes, I love that vibe so much, you know.
Me too.
It's much dark, you know. It's
very dark.
Turn on shield. Like, I love
it. It reminds me a lot of like Winter Soldier, which, you know, obviously Nick Fury was a main character in that movie as well. Yeah. One thing someone did point out, which I guess I didn't think about, is that it seems like none of the actual like heroes are in it besides Rhodey, War Machine, to be a main character. Martin Freeman as Everett Ross, who's been in the Black Panther movies and a couple other movies in the past, is going to be in it. I still think War Machine is a fucking Skrull, and I'm going to hold to that until the show comes out, because I feel like someone from like the old guard has to be revealed as a Skrull. Like, I feel like someone has to be, and he's the only one that makes sense to me personally. We'll see. They didn't really specify if the Skrulls were the actual enemy, because in Captain Marvel, they kind of made it seem like this one group of Skrulls led by Talos are kind of the good guys and kind of worked with Nick Fury. So it'll be interesting to see if the Kree play into this really hard, because the comic event that this is based off of is super confusing. If you just read the comic, you need to read all the tie-ins for it to make sense. So I didn't really like the comic event personally, because it's just super confusing to read by itself, which I think it's way better when you can pick up an event book and just read it and it's makes sense, you know. At least for the most part, you can, you know, there's like a, you know, beginning and end, and you're like, okay, I can get a grasp of what's going on. And the Secret Invasion one is not like that, in my opinion. You're just like, I don't know what's even happening. Okay. So, but I'm stoked for this series. Like I said, it a lot of this espionage vibe within the MCU is some of my favorite stuff, like Winter Soldier. So I'm excited to see where this goes, and the cast is stacked.
Yes, I love seeing the different routes and different attitudes and just like the other sides of these characters. That was like, that's a big reason that I love all these spinoff episodic series like Loki. And just like the lighting differences from the movies and just the vibes of the movies to the series shows that they do. It's I love that. Yeah. They always seem darker. You know what I mean? It's always like a dark side of everything. It's been the first time like I've been able to get my fiance kind of like to enjoy them with me. You know what I mean? So it's been nice to find that common ground between like a serious or like emotional movie that's like, or series that's like also common, you know, comical and, so I think that they're doing a great job with that, actually. I understand why some people like, and that's going into She-Hulk, you know, it's like, may not be for everybody, but I think that they do a really good job of crossing these boundaries where there's something for everybody.
100%. So that's coming next year. I think it's early next year. They did not release a date. They just said 2023. So I would imagine in the beginning of next year is when this is going to drop, either before or after Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, which they did show more footage, which was not released to the public, which I guess they would, but I guessed wrong. I'm used to being wrong with my predictions, so that's fine.
Yeah, you kind of you're gonna be with
yeah
with this.
I want to see this footage of Kang so bad.
Yeah,
Kang Train for life. They did confirm he's going to be in season 2 of Loki as well, which is awesome. We're gonna get a lot of Kang in the next few years, which is very, very dope. They did confirm a few other things, that Secret Invasion, the events of Secret Invasion are going to lead straight into Armor Wars, that like Black Panther Wakanda Forever is at least like the Ironheart stuff is going to lead directly into the Ironheart series, and that Ant-Man Quantumania is going to lead directly into the events of the Kang Dynasty, which is really cool.
I'm very excited for Wakanda Forever. I feel like that's going to be in a very emotional series. I love the Marvel stuff that really pulls at your heartstrings. That's what I come back to the most. So
yeah, that's why I love WandaVision and Loki. Those are like two of my favorite ones, and those really get you.
Loki has been my favorite since I saw that. I can't believe how long ago it's been since that came out now, because I've been on the road so much. I've missed a lot of the more recent stuff. When I'm watching that, was the first time I was like on the edge of my seat for most of that series. Honestly,
yeah, so good. I love that. That's my favorite MCU series. I love it so much. So we got some updates on the Captain America New World Order movie. Yeah. Tim Blake Nelson is returning as the leader from the fucking Incredible Hulk movie in 2008. They're finally paying that shit off, which is nuts.
Well,
talk about a long game.
I know. Yes. I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves with She-Hulk. Like, seeing that they're reaching back that far and more than just that, you know, that one film is very cool. Because that's the shit that, like, I mean, you too as well, but I grew up on, you know, with like watching my family and stuff. Now it's, you know, more since I've been on my own living, it's the whole last phase of MCU has been more like my adult life, I guess, you know?
Yes.
But that was like my childhood stuff. So to see him pull from that is cool.
So cool. It's so cool that they can take these things that seem like lost threads and finally make them full circle over a decade later. It's super, super cool. And then to add to that, they're bringing back Isaiah Bradley and Joaquin Torres back from the Falcon Winter Soldier series into this movie. So Joaquin Torres is going to be Sam Wilson's Falcon, which is cool. They kind of set that up in that series. So it seems like this is going to be very kind of Hulk centric in a weird way. I would not have guessed that the leader would be the main villain of this series, but whoa. I'm here for it. Speaking of She-Hulk, he might be involved with She-Hulk, possibly. We'll see how that goes.
I'm curious. Honestly, when I started it with the first episode, I was like, oh goodness. And but seriously, I was like, oh man. And but by the time I got through, what I mean, it's episode 4 now. I'm actually enjoying it. I am enjoying it. I was a little concerned because, like, okay, origin stories, like, I get uncomfortable with change, I guess, which is like a lot of people with like comfort shows and things you grow up with. And so just like, it's not even change as much as it is just like implications, you know what I mean? Where it's like, okay, this is what happened. And like, you just kind of have to accept it whether you like it or not. You know what I mean? This is it's just thrown at you versus like the things that you grew up with, like happening over, I mean, 20 years pretty much, you know, since like OG Hulk, and even 2003 to 2008 to 2000 to now. And so yeah, I was really uncomfortable about it at first, and then by the time we get to the second episode, I was like, this is actually pretty sick. I think it was just that like growing pains of the first one. Yeah. you have to get comfortable with the character and everything, but
I can see that. I can see that 100%. Last bit of news before we get into our now watching section. We got our Thunderbolts team revealed, which I don't think is the final Thunderbolts team. A lot of my friends have been seem to be bummed about this lineup, but I feel like Abomination might get added maybe after the events of She-Hulk. We'll see how that plays out. Possibly Zemo might be evolved. But our Thunderbolts team as of now is Yelena Belova, Taskmaster, Ghost from Ant-Man and the Wasp, U.S. Agent, Red Guardian, Winter Soldier, and it's led by Val. Someone did point this out that almost everyone in the team has the same exact power set. There is 3 super soldiers on the team, which is a good point. That is a good point. What I took from it is that the interactions between these characters are going to be fucking gold. Bucky and Yelena together is going to be unbelievable. Like, that's going to be the best thing ever. And seeing Sebastian Stan get another chance to be, well, getting a real chance to be a lead in a movie like this that's going to end phase 5 is really cool. And I do think they're holding some stuff close to the vest because this movie comes out a while from now. And I think there might be some surprises in store. But what do you think about this lineup? Are you bummed by it? Are you stoked about it?
No, I think it's cool. Like you said, I think it'll be very interesting to see the interactions just because it's very exciting. I think that they like we need a new group of like a new team, I guess. I don't want to say team, but just this everyone is obviously holding on to the last phase of like the Infinity Saga. Right. As far as like bringing like a fresh face, like not a face, but fresh faces back and as a spotlight, and like you said, a lead that it will be a lot more interesting than just kind of riding off the same shit that we've been riding off of.
A lot of people compare this team to the Suicide Squad, which I get the comparisons, but they are majorly different in ways because the thing with Suicide Squad is they take prisoners and they sent them on literal suicide missions. The thing with the Thunderbolts is they're a government ran Avengers team that are full of mostly bad guys that they put off to the public as heroes. And some of these people are actually kind of legit heroes, kind of just under they kind of got the short end of the stick. You know what I mean? So that's the interesting dynamic to me is that they're going to be pushed to the public as the new Avengers. Cause right now we don't have an Avengers team. We have remnants of it. We don't have an actual Avengers team. Obviously, that's going to change by the time we get to Kang Dynasty. They're going to have to get some teams together to fight off Kang. It's going to need to happen. But this is going to be, to the public, the new Avengers. And that's the interesting duo. It's because it's gonna be kind of like The Boys, but under a Marvel lens where it's, you know.
Where it's like chaotic.
Yeah. And some of these people are really not good people. Yeah. You know? Or... No. People with good intentions, but they're willing to cross lines that normal heroes wouldn't. Like we saw John Walker murder a dude in a street with a shield.
Yes. I think that that's a really exciting turn for them.
Yeah.
Just because that's pretty much the polar opposite of what has been happening, you know,
right
up until this point. So.
Yeah, I'm stoked for this movie. I mean, anything Marvel puts out, I'm going to... they've never put out anything that I'm like, this sucks. There's been things I liked more than others, but I've said it a million times. I sound like a broken record, but they haven't put out anything where I was like, that is bad. So until they start putting out stuff that's just progressively bad, they're going to have my number for now. So
yeah.
Got a lot to look forward to with Marvel in the next... probably our lifetimes. So if you're not down for it, that's fine. But if you are... it's a good time for you.
Yeah, we'll probably be like 7 years old and be a whole new
probably, yeah. Whole new
thing, and it's still just going and going.
On to our now watching section. I'm gonna go with you first because I'm gonna guess you might not have watched that much because you've been on tour forever. But what have you been watching lately?
Honestly, no. In the last year. So we started touring actually as of yesterday. We've been on tour for a year, about outside of just a few weeks of being home.
Jesus,
in between. So it has been very hard for me to keep up. We started watching as a band. We would just pop up in the computer, the laptops. As things drop on, you know, Disney, we try to keep up on it. Obviously, like we watched Obi-Wan, and as it was coming out, we were trying to watch Obi-Wan every day.
That's awesome.
But yeah, that was really cool. It was nice. We all get to watch it together. You know what I mean? Yeah. Which is like, usually it's just me here at home or something.
Right.
Like most of my bandmates are nerds too. So, and especially Mike, like Jeff and Mike especially, but Mike is like, he is the fucking, I would actually love to suggest him to have you on your podcast. Cause like he is, he is the like most knowledgeable person I've ever met as far as Star Wars and just that whole world of nerdery. But yeah, so I learn a lot from him watching with him that I would not know otherwise. You know what I mean? Just little things, like tiny things like pan shots that have something in it that I would never notice. And he's just like, oh my God. You know, so that was really cool to get to watch that with him. We started watching Love, Death, and Robots together. That was pretty good. I mean, I'm also a very big video game person. I do most of the time when I'm home, I'm playing games more than watching stuff. It's old now, but I played Jedi Fallen Order for the first time.
Yes!
That was probably my game of the year. Until I played Elden Ring, that was like my favorite game that I played in a long time. And then Elden Ring kind of took over my life, but... I'm honestly more of a now playing than a now watching because anymore.
That's fine. Yeah.
It's super hard to find time to really sit and enjoy a series. I have a couple months off at the end of this year, and that is my goal. I'm definitely catching up on a lot of stuff.
Hell so. Yeah. Jedi Fallen Order is so dope. That game rocks so hard.
Story is great. Really compelling, actually. And it's not just like point A, point B. Bullshit. No. Like a lot of them are. Around the same time as I was playing watching The Mandalorian season 2, I started playing that. I was like, damn. This is good. And they just announced a new one, actually. They announced
it's coming out early next year, I think. March.
Yeah. I can't remember what it's called.
Jedi Survivor.
Yeah, Jedi Survivor. I love The Last Jedi, so
yeah. I actually do too. we're among that subsect of the world. It's, you know, it's one or the other. It's like religion and politics. It's like if you like Last Jedi, it's the same thing. It's
great. Yeah, exactly.
Whenever I meet a friend and they're like, they're the opposite, I'm like, we just won't talk about this because we know this ends for both of us. And they're like, you're right. And I'm like, I'm glad we had that talk. Good. good.
Yeah.
As far as what I've been watching, I finished The Sandman, which is on Netflix. That series is fucking fantastic. It's if you're not familiar with The Sandman, I talked about it a little last week, but it's based on a comic by Neil Gaiman, but it's not very, if you think comic book and then going to watch this, it's definitely not what you would expect. It's basically like a fantasy series, and it's amazing. It's such a good series. Probably one of the best series I've seen in a while. It's very, very good. I highly recommend it.
Heard of that. I feel so good. Check it out.
It's the hard thing with Netflix is that it was super talked about it the week it came out, and that's it, because that's what happens with Netflix. Everything gets dropped at once, so people talk about it like that week, because I didn't even watch it until it was out for like a few weeks, so I was behind the conversation on it completely. Yeah. And but that's how Netflix is. They that's drop
like,
it.
It's like binge culture. When it's out, it's crazy too. I'm always curious how people like immediately find the time. You know what I mean? It's like, everything that drops on Netflix and most of the stuff on Hulu too, it's instant. And then it's a couple, like you said, it's a couple weeks and then it's gone.
Yep.
Until the next,
which is a bummer. I hope it gets renewed for a season 2 because it's so fucking good. We'll see. Then I saw The Rehearsal on HBO, and this show is the most indescribable show I've ever watched in my entire life. I don't know if you're familiar with Nathan Fielder, the guy who did Nathan for You.
Why are you talking about it?
I posted on my Facebook, like actual Facebook profile.
That's what it was. Yeah, you were like, this is the most indescribable show. And I actually made me want to watch it.
It is so insane. I can understand why some people don't like it, because it is so awkward and mind-blowingly weird. because Nathan Fielder is probably the most awkward human being on the face of the planet, but I think he might be one of the smartest human beings on the planet, because the basic premise, and shout out to John O'Diener, who talked about it in our Now Watching section with him, that made me actually sit down and like, okay, I'm going to watch it. Puts out these weird, vague Craigslist ads. People reply to them, and he takes them, and they have like a simple, mundane problem they have to solve. And then he runs a rehearsal with them. So like basically the first episode is this guy who's been lying about his, he said he has a master's degree, but really he only has a bachelor's degree. And he's in this trivia group that he goes to bar trivia and they do trivia with this group. And for some reason he lied about having a master's degree because he wanted to fit in with everyone. So it's been like years and now he wants to confess that he only has a bachelor's degree because it's been eating at him for years. So this dude takes the bar that they go to, completely recreates it in a warehouse, hires actors that are like it, like actors that meet he finds a way to have them meet with the real people that act like the actual person, to plot out every scenario so you're prepared for this interaction. It is so insane, dude. It is crazy.
I've heard when the tour that we're on, I heard people talking about it actually, like right when we started the tour, and they're like, oh my God, this new Nathan Fielder show. And I haven't had the chance to catch it yet, but I'm definitely going to. Nathan For You obviously is like a cult. Like, it's funny how bands, especially we notice band dudes are like this very specific niche of people where everyone knows and loves the same shit. And it's like all the one-liners from shows like I Think You Should Leave and Eric and like Tim and Eric, all the shit like we grew up on, like Metalocalypse, you know, shit like that. It's like, you can say a line from the show that, like, if you go to a fucking grocery store, everyone's going to look at you like you're absolutely insane. But 50 band dudes on a tour will know exactly what you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. It's definitely up that alley of humor. Yeah. Like everything you listed. Yeah.
Yeah. Need to catch that for sure.
Other than that, I've been continually watching Welcome to Wrexham. It's the new docuseries on Hulu. It drops 2 episodes each week. It's Ryan Reynolds and Rob McElhenney, who bought a football club over in Europe, and them running it. It's actually really heartfelt. It shows a lot about the town, like people involved with the team directly and then people from the town indirectly and stuff. And it's a really cool thing to see two people who are so famous care so much about like bringing good to this town and doing well by this team and stuff. It's really cool. I know it's gotten a lot of comparisons to Ted Lasso, but I compared it to like a real life Ted Lasso. So if you're into that kind of stuff, I don't give a fuck about football or many sports in general, and I love this show. So if you're worried about that, I wouldn't be worried about it.
I really enjoy as people.
Yeah.
It's from their social media presence and stuff. So.
Then you would love it because they're in full force in it. It's so great. I want to be friends with Ryan Reynolds so bad.
Yeah. My favorite thing like on the internet is like memes that are like, my boyfriend says he's straight, but are you sure? And then you see Ryan Reynolds and it's like
fair. That's exactly. Very fair. Yeah. And then last weekend I watched 2 horror movies, trying to get in the spirit of fall in October. So, and I think people are going to be very surprised about which one I liked and which one I didn't like. So I watched Tusk, the Kevin Smith horror movie. I
fucking love Tusk.
I will come back. And then I watched It Follows, which is kind of like, everyone loves that movie. So I liked Tusk, didn't like It Follows. Tusk was fucking insane, dude.
I know. I didn't like It Follows. Like when I was a kid, I went to see it when I was in like high school with some of my friends. And I was like, I did not like it. The Tusk I love because it's like, it's not supposed to be funny, but it's funny. And it's also like, it's not even a horror. It's just like,
it's just unnerving.
Exactly. Yeah. It's unnerving. Yeah.
The only qualm I had with Tusk is that, because in the beginning it's kind of funny, it's like very Kevin Smith dialogue, super quippy and like funny, but then it gets super serious. As soon as he gets like knocked out, I don't want to give anything away, but most people know what happened in Tusk, but as soon as he gets knocked out, the tone shifts drastically, and it gets like really like unnerving and uneasy. But then when Johnny Depp's character comes in, he's like so goofy. It felt off in that moment for me. And that was the only part I didn't really like, was his character, because it felt so weird with the rest of the movie. But that's the only qualm I had. I really, really like Tusk. And I know people, like I posted that on my Instagram stories, and people were either like, fuck this movie, or I love this movie. There's no in between.
My fiance and like and her friends, every time if I bring up the word Tusk, they're like, no, because it just makes them so uncomfortable. But there's something about it, I think, it was maybe 2018, and we were on tour then, and we were staying with Joe Bad from Fit for an Autopsy, his house in New York, his apartment, and we just got ignorantly blazed. It's like 4 a.m, and somehow that's what ended up on TV. So it's like we were just laughing about it constantly because yeah. we're just idiots and we're stoned and we've been awake for like probably way too long. Yeah. So yeah, there's like I don't want to give anything away either, but there's like one shot near the end where you know, he's sitting there at post transformation and he throws a fish at him or some shit and the camera turns and it's just like a zoom in on his face. And I have never laughed that hard in my life. Like, I was just like, yo, like they chose that shot for this movie. Like knowing full well that it's going to be like, you can't look at that and be like, that's not hilarious. Like if you're in the, like, it depends on how you look at it. You know what I mean? It's like, it could be terrifying zoom, but like, at the time, we just all started crying laughing. And since then, that's why that's one of my favorite, honestly, one of my favorite movies because of that. Because it's all about the context that you take in. You know what I mean? Like, it can be hilarious or it can be creepy and unsettling. But yeah, I show that scene to anybody who hasn't seen it. I'm like, you have to watch it. Nothing else. You will find pleasure in this part.
Yes. And they're making a sequel. Kevin Smith confirmed they're doing a sequel.
Oh, God, really? I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait. Wow. Yeah. I can't wait to see what he does that. But It Follows, I just found very, not like it's like a bad movie. It was just really boring.
Yeah.
Like, nothing happens in that movie. There are some parts that I'm like, oh, shit's about to get crazy. You know, like every time you see like the creepy stuff that like the It Follows part, I was like, yo, shit's about to get wild. And then that scene happens and then it just ends. And I'm like, okay. Why do people love this movie so much? I don't know, which is crazy. I'm usually the most like positive dude about movies, but I am very honest when I have criticisms or there's something I just don't like. But I just watched it and I was like, did I miss something? Because everyone loves this movie. Like everyone always talks about how amazing it is. And it was just on Netflix. So I was like, whatever, I'll pop it on. And I was just like, okay. No. I was like, I don't know.
It's like I've seen memes that are like, what would you do? Like, would you take $1 billion if a snail was following you forever trying to kill you? Like, nothing can stop it. I'm like, it's literally, that's the whole plot of this movie, pretty much.
But yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, that's one that never really got me, honestly.
Yeah,
I thought it was kind of silly. It just around that time too, when it came out, I was looking for the most like, I don't know. I guess I was like an edgy, like teenager kind of coming into, you know, about to graduate. And I was just looking for the most like fucked up movies. Like, you know, yeah. I really liked the gory stuff back then. Cause I was into like super, I don't know. That was when I was like finding real extreme death metal and deathcore and like just trying to find the most ignorant stuff. And I'm like, this is like, I didn't understand like suspenseful, you know, thriller. Yeah. So honestly, I haven't seen it since then. I might enjoy it more now, but then, back then I was like, dude, I just
I love suspenseful stuff, and there is no suspense in that movie. Like at all.
Very exciting.
Like I love suspenseful, especially like thrillers. Like I can really get down with a good thriller, but there was nothing thrilling about that to me, at least. But dope, let's get into our main topic. So before we get into some She-Hulk talk, I wanted to get, as my friends at Hopnik News call it, your pop culture origin story. So what got you into this world of, you know, comic book love and Star Wars love or even horror movies? Like what got you into that as a kid?
So my dad actually kind of exposed me to a lot of like Transformers and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like the stuff that was popular when he was a kid. Like he had kept all of his action figures and he had like ripped VHS tapes from the, you know, from television.
Yes.
So we had a lot of those when I was a kid. That was like my early love for that. And then honestly, Transformers carried, and it was really convenient because around the time I started maybe getting a little old enough to stop caring about Transformers, the movies came out, like the Shia LaBeouf.
Right.
And that really like catapulted my love for, it's almost like sci-fi space stuff, you know what I mean? Mixed with that, like, and Marvel does that too really well. I'm really big into just space and abstract ideas, and I love this talking to people about like the vast fucking universe we live in and how much cool shit there is out there. And they do a really great job of putting that sort of feeling of discovery and just vastness and like anything can happen into something that's like palpable and that you can kind of digest outside of like, I grew up with like books and pictures of like space and shit. And it's like, that's like the ultra nerdy level of shit of it where you really have to care and dive into it versus just being able to like passively digest things like that. So that kind of really made me movies like that, or space or even like thriller movies, Alien and shit like that. Like that was a big thing for me. Just, I got into mostly horror and thriller movies when I was kind of going into like middle school and high school, which really like catapulted my love into like death metal and deathcore and like really just like gruesome shit. Definitely my dad had a big influence on me with that. And but that's pretty much like music came from my mom actually. She was kind of like a metal, like pop culture and that, and like TV and shit like that really came from like my dad, my dad's side of the family. He always wanted to go see movies. We would go see all the new action movies and shit like that when I was a kid. So that kind of kept me interested. And then I remember when I was, I think like 8 years old or 9 years old, Revenge of the Sith came out. And that was the first one that I was old enough to like go see it in a theater and remember seeing it in the theater. Yeah, and that was like a big game-changing turning point for me. I was like, holy shit, I didn't know what was happening at all, but I was like, this is so fucking cool, you know? And then we actually had like the VHS, like the trilogy pack of VHS, which I have. It was my dad's. I still have it here, of the originals. And so that I got into those, and I would watch them with my friends. And then I never actually even watched the rest of the prequel, like the first two prequels, until I was maybe in high school. So I went from just like loving Revenge of the Sith, just then religiously watching 4, 5, 6, and just like that was it, you know. And then I didn't really care too much about it, like again, until I said when The Mandalorian came out. It was probably a good like 10 years of me not really paying attention to Star Wars. And then just in the last few years. So we fucked up. I'm actually gonna ruin your day here. I watched Avengers, like original Avengers movie around when it came out, you know. I can't even remember when it came out now, but I remember watching it when it came out. I watched it with my fiance, and then we kind of, she had never really seen any of the origin story movies leading up to that point. So we went back and we watched through all of the Iron Man's, Captain America, all this shit. I don't remember how we were like with some friends or something, and they had Endgame on. Like we went to a bonfire, actually. We went to our friends and we were just drinking and getting stoned, and they had Endgame on, and we watched it. We fucked up and we watched Endgame without seeing like Infinity War, without seeing Age of Ultron. So we pretty much had a lot of shit spoiled for us at that point. But after we saw it, well, especially for her, after we saw it, we were like, we have to watch everything in order. And then so we kind of just chilled for a while. And when Chadwick passed away, she had never seen Black Panther. And I was like, you should watch this movie. So we watched it. She was almost crying just because like she'd never seen it or anything. And she didn't even know who it was. But just like the knowing and then the weight of that movie, that's very emotional. And all this, it kind of like reignited our love for this genre and the MCU. So then we sat, and that was around the time that we sat and we watched every origin movie like of that phase pretty much. And so I mean, it took us, I think it was during COVID too. We actually had, I had seen most of them, but she had not seen any of them. I had missed a couple here and there. I'd missed like obviously like I said, I missed those two Avengers movies, and I had missed like Iron Man 3, I think. So it was nice. We sat and watched. We right when COVID had hit, we had actually both got COVID, and so we had both had it, and we had a roommate, and this was when it was first blowing up, and you know, you had to quarantine for forever. Basically, we were quarantined for over a month. We didn't leave our house for over a month, so we watched all of them. Like everything we could find in order, in like the cinematic order, you know what I mean? The way they suggest you watch it. And so that was, I guess that's the full circle how I got back into the pandemic pretty much. Really, it's the first time I had time to sit and like watch a lot of content in a long time. Right. Touring forever and working in between touring. But yeah, it really like ignited my love for whole last 20 years of MCU and action.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's super cool. It's super funny because I've actually kind of encountered a few people who never really watched the MCU stuff. One was my friend Greg, and he actually in the Facebook group, he would update people as he was watching stuff. Because he did this recently. I think he finished the journey like a few months ago or something. And then Benny from the band Avoid, mm-hmm. he's been messaging me about how he's gotten super into the MCU because of his significant other as well. And he messaged me like 2 weeks ago being like, yo, I'm about to watch Endgame for the first time. Yeah. And I'm like, buckle in, bro. I was like, you're in for a ride, my man. Yeah. Let's talk some She-Hulks.
Longers, have you ever had tequila sunrise?
No, I think so.
Long Island iced tea?
Yeah.
Blue Carousel?
No. What's Blue Carousel?
I don't know, it's blue. Yeah. Manhattan?
Yep, Manhattan had it.
Slow Gin Fizz?
Nope.
Just vodka straight?
No, I've had
Goldschlagers?
Vodka and yak milk. Never again.
Do you have any of that here?
Actually, we still have some left from the wedding.
Yeah. I'd love to try some yak milk.
Yeah.
What's your favorite drink?
Well, gin and tonic.
Longers. Okay. I don't know if they do bottomless gin and tonic, but we will find it.
Okay.
Oh my God. Yum.
So episodes 3 and 4 have come out the past few weeks. You said earlier that at first you were a little hesitant, but as it progressed, you got more into it, which I can definitely see. I think 2 and 3 is where the series really gets its footing of what it actually is. In my opinion, 3 and 4, I said this on Twitter, and it's like, is this show the best show out there right now? No. Is there better shows out there than it? Yes. But is this show so much fucking fun and just a delight to watch? Yes, it is. Yeah. And not every show needs to be the best show ever. Not every movie needs to be the best movie ever. Like, we watch the stuff to be entertained, you know? And like, this show is doing the job of entertaining me, at least.
It took me a long time to kind of accept after watching Endgame and after binging so much MCU content and then also so much good Star Wars content in the last few years. Like, that has spoiled me for sure. Yeah. You know what I mean? I feel like after you go through that experience, especially like growing up with it and kind of coming through it, that it's like, it's hard to find something that's really as gripping and exciting. So I think part of that is just accepting that, you know, like you said, not everything's going to be the greatest thing you've ever seen. And I kind of have to remind myself of that sometimes, because sometimes I'm like, this sucks. And I'm like, no, it doesn't suck. I've just been spoiled by incredible content, you know, and it's the same thing with music too. It's just the same shit like we're just talking about. Like, you get so spoiled by really great things that sometimes something can be really good, but it's hard to keep up. I think with She-Hulk, with it, just when I first put it on, I just feel like, and it wasn't even just her, but just the general like look of the show, the CGI, the colors, the energy just felt different. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even Hulk, I guess, even Smart Hulk, like, he looks different than when you see him in other things that he was in. Just something about it felt a little off-putting at first. And I was like, oh man, this is kind of weird. I don't know if I like it. And also, like, okay, the whole, I enjoyed like the breaking the fourth wall, but like when it happened, the first, like that first whole episode is basically a one long break. Right. You know? Yeah. So I was like, this is really weird. I didn't like the way they did it in the first episode. That's all it was. It just made me uncomfortable. Then when we got into the second episode, when it was like less about the quips between Hulk and She-Hulk, and kind of like, I feel like obviously that's the origin story. I feel like they're definitely using Hulk to kind of like try to make you comfortable and get you into the show. You know what I mean? And obviously like cameos and stuff. I feel like it wasn't working, and now that I've seen up to episode 4, I'm like, okay, it's working for me. I think, like you said, episode 2 really helped a lot. At first, I felt like they were doing jokes. I was sitting there with Victoria. They were doing jokes, and we were just kind of like, oh. But then, as like the jokes were rolling into episode 2 and episode 3, we're actually laughing. You know what I mean? Yeah. So at first I was kind of like, I don't know, but it definitely had me laughing. And I think that I just kind of had to accept that that's what I'm going to get out of it is laughs. And like you said, at the end of episode four, it's starting to feel a little more serious, you know what I mean? A little more like it has weight to it, to what's actually happening in the outside universe versus just kind of like, this is what, you know, this is attorney at law, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying it. Episode three was really probably my favorite that I've seen so far, I think, because I can't remember his name. I really like the douchebag character. That's Bukowski.
Oh yeah, Bukowski. Yeah.
Doing Bukowski. Honestly, I feel like actually it's kind of like everybody knows somebody like that.
Yeah, dude, 100%.
Especially in Band World, as I'm watching it, I'm like, God, that's so
Yeah, that the whole Megan Thee Stallion bit was I thought was super hilarious, especially with like the after credit scene with her actually like twerking with Megan Thee Stallion. I thought that was so great. And
I was expecting it during the episode, and I was like, oh fuck. I actually was like, oh man, this must have just been like a meme that somebody made. And then I let the credits roll and I was like, fuck, there. I was like jumping up and yelling, actually. I was like, there it is.
Yeah. It's so funny and so smart. And even, I guess Tatiana Maslany, who plays Jennifer Walters, is like a massive Megan Thee Stallion fan. So she like freaked out when that she knew that that was going to happen. And even Megan Thee Stallion's come out and saying it's like she's super proud of being a part of like the MCU and stuff, which I think is really, really cool. And that, again, that speaks more to like broadening the audience and people being like, Megan Thee Stallion's in a Marvel show? I got to watch this and stuff like that. Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's definitely... It's insane to think that she's technically canon. You know what I mean?
Like, literally, yeah, yeah. It's wild the real life things they've made canon. The main case is like the Megan Thee Stallion case, and then the Emil Blonsky case. And I really love the Emil Blonsky stuff. I thought it was just hilarious. Even the stuff in episode two, going into this episode, I thought was just really funny. Bringing in Wong, kind of tying those loose ends between Shang-Chi and this. With the whole of them fighting in the cage, they explained that stuff. And that was a good thing with the first two episodes too, is explaining, you know, why Hulk was in human form in the Shang-Chi after credit scenes and why his arm got healed. They explained all of it. There's a lot of MCU interconnectivity that's happening in the show that I didn't fully expect would happen in the show, which is really cool. And it makes me excited for what's to come in the, like, the second half of the season. And yeah, episode three was fun. That's probably my favorite too. It's hard with episode four, because I will say with episode four, the Wong and Madison stuff is fucking gold. Like, it seems like everyone's a big fan of it, but I loved it so much. Like, Wongers.
I actually wrote it down. I was like, that was my favorite part.
So good, dude. The fact that she like drops in with a heart in her hand, and she's like, oh, like, major spoilers for Sopranos for anyone listening to this, if you haven't seen Sopranos, because they do drop two major plot points of Sopranos within this episode. And it's funny because my friend posted in the group, he's like, I never thought I would say this, but if you've never watched the Sopranos, in the new episode of She-Hulk, there's major spoilers for it. And then my friend texted me the next day, who's never watched the Sopranos, and is like, yo, yeah, that shit got spoiled for me. And I was like, oh my god, she spoiled Sopranos for Wong like twice, just like I'm sure she spoiled Sopranos for a bunch of people who have never watched it. And it's just, it's like even the time code of what's on the screen is like accurate to like right before what she spoiled and everything like that.
Oh, so saw it. We were sitting there watching it together when it came up. And it's sitting there. It's like the little Netflix. Like, I'm like, it's on Netflix. And that's where we watched it. I'm like, this is fucked.
Yeah.
I knew it was coming. And then also I'd seen people talking about it on Twitter. So when I saw it, I'm like, no way.
The fact that they played the intro music in it is crazy, because they must have paid a pretty penny to play that in there.
Yeah.
Which, good for them. Good for them to stick to that and include it. And later, Wong is watching This Is Us, which I love This Is Us. So that was awesome to see, like, man, Wong watches The Sopranos and This Is Us. Like, we are Wong. We are all Wong.
Post-credit scene for that episode was great.
So good.
Yeah, where they're just sitting there fucking going back and forth, and that was my favorite part of that episode, actually.
Yeah,
it was their whole interaction, and Wongers and everything. But I kind of got a little bit lost with episode four with Donnie Blaze and everything. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this, but that's why I think episode three is my favorite so far. I'm excited to see. I really thought it was cool getting into the world of with portals with Wong and the whole, all the demons and all this shit. I'm like, yeah, this is getting pretty dark and like also almost like, I don't know. It's like dark comedy, but yeah. In a still like almost family friendly way, but like the whole dick move thing and all that. I'm like, it's cool they can get away with that.
I mean, she did go on a dating app, and it was pretty obvious that they
oh my God. Yeah,
they slept together.
Yeah. It's a little less like aggressive, but did you watch Peacemaker at all?
Yes.
See, it gives me that kind of vibe of like dark humor, kind of get away with whatever they want to. It seems like they're setting up to where they can get away with whatever. It's not a far reach to go to that. That's like the next level.
Yeah, they've been pushing boundaries pretty hard, and I like that. Like, even like I talked about Multiverse of Madness earlier, but I mean that movie, for being PG-13, they put a lot of stuff in there I was not expecting for them to put in, and it made me super stoked for like a Blade movie. Obviously, the Deadpool movie that's going to eventually happen is going to be rated R as well. Well, it's going to be, I think, probably the first thing that's rated R, but I think even probably the Daredevil, they'll probably, because the Netflix version of Daredevil was very heavy and dark, and I don't think it's going to be as dark, but it seems like, because they did show a mid-season trailer and it featured Matt Murdock because Daredevil is going to be in the She-Hulk series, and the dialogue he puts in it seems very true to character. Yes, he's going to be placed in a comedy, but I don't, just because like Wong, for example, Wong is placed in this comedy show and he's not usually in comedy situations other than the normal Marvel comedy. He's never been in like a straight up comedy, but he still seems like Wong. You know, he doesn't seem like overly funny Wong. He just seems like Wong in a comedy setting, and I think it's gonna be the same thing for Daredevil. It's just gonna be Daredevil in a comedic setting, but he's still going to be the Daredevil that we know and love. And he's gonna be in the Echo series that's coming out next year, and then he gets his own series that's 18 episodes long.
No, I can't believe it. Yeah, I believe I saw they said they haven't even started filming for it yet, but
no, not that one yet. No,
yeah, but I that's still very exciting. 18 episodes for one season.
Crazy.
Like, absurd, yeah. And I feel like that's a very deserving character for a series.
Oh, yeah.
That too. Sure. Because like my first exposure to Daredevil was I think 2004 movie.
The Ben Affleck movie?
Yes, Ben Affleck movie. And so then I know. And so like going from that, and then this guy, that was kind of like a, like just like, oh, whatever. So I never really cared about Daredevil because of that movie. And then
it's fair.
Yeah, but then obviously the series was a big redemption. So it's like, oh, yeah. I think that is 18 episodes. It's gonna be very telling. It's gonna be very exciting.
Him and Wilson Fisk are gonna play a major part in the Echo series as well. So I think this into the Daredevil series are gonna be a nice little bridge together. And I at the end of episode four, when Titania sues for use of trademark of the name She-Hulk, I think that Jennifer Walters might call in a certain Matt Murdock to represent her possibly. And that's what brings him out to LA. Cause as we know, he's from New York City. So I think that might be how he gets out here. It seems like we'll see how that goes, but
there's something special about you. Yeah. Yeah. And like this fan base is like the deep thinking that you're putting into this. I'm like, I would not have thought of that, honestly. So that's actually very exciting.
It is exactly what I thought when as soon as you did that, I was like, oh, she'll probably need a lawyer. And maybe she has this lawyer friend from New York who happens to be, maybe not, I could be totally wrong, but like I said, I've made a lot of predictions that have been wrong, which is fine. It's fine.
Yeah. It's a bit like thinking about that makes me eager to want to keep
watching. Yeah. I'm super excited to see their interactions together. Even the short glimpse we get in that mid-season trailer, I'm so stoked about it. Yeah. And we talked about the leader in Captain America 4, he might be the boss that tried to get Hulk's blood, because Hulk's blood is what deforms him and turns him into the leader. So we might see him in this too. Maybe not, but could be Wilson Fisk for some reason. It could be Sharon Carter as the power broker. Who knows? There's many dark, evil leaders that could be trying to get this power of the Hulk. Maybe even Val. Who the fuck knows? But I'm excited to see where the series goes for sure.
See, that's something I'm the thing I'm enjoying actually the most about of She-Hulk so far, I think, is like the little callbacks to like the the old ass Hulk movies.
Yeah.
Like obviously Abomination, like they were able to get the same fucking guy to do that. And also like, I don't want to spoil too much, but you know, when they try to get some of the blood and, in episode three, I think at the end of episode three,
yep.
It's like, I remember, I think it was the 2003 movie. Like that's pretty much the whole plot of that movie is
right.
Dad and the government trying, you know, to
yep.
get it. And it's so like, that was really cool. I think, cause that's something that pretty much hasn't been talked about in the whole last, you know, 20 years. It's just,
yeah,
it's a totally different, not a different take on it, I guess, but it's a nice callback take.
Yeah. So, and they did set it up pretty hard in episode one when Bruce Banner destroys all our blood samples and it was like, if this gets in the wrong, a drop gets in the wrong hand, this could be a major problem. And I was like, well, that's going to come back later for sure. And one thing pointing back to the original Incredible Hulk, one of the best comedic lines had to have been episode two when she calls Bruce Banner and he's on that ship talking to her about her representing the Abomination. Mm. And he goes, I'm a different person. Literally. And yeah. I was like, dude, that is good shit. And Jen Walters breaks the fourth wall for 2 seconds and just goes, haha. It was like, it's so good. Such a good joke.
Yeah, we both laughed at that too. I was just watching it with Victoria. We were both like, oh man.
So good. It
actually got us to go back, and I was just sitting on YouTube and going back and watching clips and just little scenes and stuff from The Incredible Hulk and also 2008 Hulk yeah, man, it's I'm enjoying it more now than when I originally texted you about it. And I was like, oh man,
yeah, I was like, oh no.
I just got into episode two, and I was like, I hope this goes the right way. And but like I said, we started getting some good laughs and callbacks. Yeah. I'm like, okay, yeah, this is going well. I mean, there's a lot of you know, with certain shows, it's like, oh, you have to get through the first season, you know, with
right
this stuff, it's like. They're relying on a lot of, you know, other context and content where it's not really, you don't have a season, you know what I mean? You have an episode and you're lucky if these shows get more than one or two seasons, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I'm glad you're enjoying it. And thank you so much for taking time to do this. I know you still got a little bit of the tour left, but before we get out of here, plug what the band has going on in the future so the people know what's going on.
We're finishing up our tour with Upon a Burning Body. We're going to be going to the studio in a couple months to work on a record. We had a lot of stuff planned for next year, but a lot of things have been getting moved around here and there, so I'm not exactly sure what our next endeavor is. We're supposed to go to Europe early next year, but that's been pushed back, so we're working on some headliners. So all I'm going to say right now is to expect new music next year. A whole lot of new music next year, and I guess keep an eye out for some tours. Obviously Unbridled is out, there's a video, we have merch, we have all the good shit, so please check it out. We have indie merch, Rising merch for the UK, Empiricon. We also have a store called Slam in Asia. In Asia, if for whatever reason someone in Asia is listening to this, that's the cheapest place to get merch for you guys. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Thanks for having me. This was really cool. It's very rare that I get to nerd out with people about TV and video anymore, aside from the people that I see every day 365 days. So this is great. Hopefully we'll bump into each other soon.
Yes, I hope so too. But yes, man, this was fucking awesome. So you guys know the drill. If you want to go and support the show, go to metalcorners.com. All of our links are right there. If you want to pick up some merch, it's right there. And if you want to follow me on my personal accounts, it's just Sean Xmont on Instagram and Twitter. And until next time, see you later, nerds.